Let's read the text. Again, 1 Corinthians chapter 11, 31 and 32. But there's a contrast, look, bearing in mind the information that we had in verse 30. But if we discerned or judged ourselves, we should not be judged. Then verse 32. But when we are judged, we are chastened of the Lord, that we may not be condemned with the world. As you look at the beginning of verse 31, Paul uses a word which is sometimes translated judged in various versions. That word is expressed with the imperfect tense, that is continuous tense. So look at it that way. Paul says, if we continually discerned, if we repeatedly judged ourselves. The full sense of the thought is, and you've also got a second term there that's an imperfect tense verb. So again, there may be some distinction in the translation that you have, maybe not, kind of depends on the version. But the thought is, the full sense of the thought is, God would not continually judge the Corinthians if the Corinthians continually judged themselves. Is that kind of a principle in life? If you are trying to regulate yourself, if you're trying to do what you need to do, and if you're trying to make sure that you're headed on the right road, how much correction do you usually need? Not very much. And, I mean, it just works that way in life. You think about the student, or you think about the employee, you think about people in the neighborhood. Anybody have kind of a habitual offender in their neighborhood? If you have any covenants, there is somebody that just will not violate, that will always violate the covenants. We've got somebody that's like that. We have, I don't know, a set of covenants is probably about 15 pages long. And there's some things in there that you're not supposed to do. Now, some of it is pretty small, pretty minor. You know, don't set your trash out, you know, before this time. And don't leave your trash can out there, you know, a month after the garbage has been picked up. Those kinds of things. And those are kind of common sense items. But there's some other items in there that are a little more notable. You know, don't let your grass get 2 feet tall. Okay? You know, that should be kind of common sense. And if you are not willing to do those kinds of things, there's probably going to be a consequence. In town, if you let your grass be overgrown, somebody might show up from the county or the city. You might get a visit and say, you've got to cut that down or we're going to send somebody out and we're going to charge you for that. That's kind of what Paul is doing here in 1 Corinthians 11, 31 and 32. He is saying, hey, you need to look at your own lives and you need to evaluate yourself. Otherwise, if you don't get with the program, then God is going to take care of things. You really find that Christians need to judge themselves when it comes to matters involving fellow Christians, matters involving Jesus. It involves our worship. We should be, as we come to worship, evaluating our worship. Did I truly try to worship God today? And then, of course, our commitment as well. Are we truly trying to live a committed life to Christ? Steve?
Sometimes people that use your example that are going against the covenant or going against the rule of the city or whatever will double down on that.
Yeah.
It becomes a fight. I remember, and I don't remember why, but there was a guy near downtown Elkhart. They had some beef with the city. And he decided to paint his house really bright purple. You could see it from 3 blocks away. And that was the whole point.
Yeah.
You didn't even have to go down that street to see it. But he wanted to make a point, and I don't know what.
I remember that house. I remember that house as well. I don't remember what the beef was, but I am upset, and this is going to be the way that I protest. Didn't he have like 3 colors on it, if I remember right? I mean, it was really kind of wild.
Right, and it wasn't very far from the post office.
Yeah.
Downtown.
Yeah. It just went out and looked like it got a can of spray paint, and all right, I've got this side, and now I'm going to get another side. So you're right. There are people who do that kind of thing. And Paul says that's not what it's about. That's not what the Christian life is supposed to be like. Then as you look at the end of verse 31, the King James, the ASV, both use the word judge there, but there is a different term used in the original text. As I indicated a moment ago, that is also an imperfect tense verb. So when you, again, as I said, combine the thought there, if you are willing to continually judge, if you are willing to evaluate yourself on a regular basis, Paul says you're going to avoid something. Are you going to avoid something good or something bad?
Bad.
All right. And what would the bad thing be?
The discipline and judgment.
Yeah, the judgment of God. That sounds like a pretty good deal to me. If you don't want that, Paul says that is a possibility, but you can avoid that if you will continue to evaluate yourself. So when you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 11, we are spending some time when it comes to self-examination. Paul says you check yourself out so that you don't end up being in a bad relationship with God. The problem here really then is the Corinthians were not judging themselves. If you back up a little bit, you could go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 28. And again, Paul talks about examining ourselves, continuous tense. If that's not going to be done, then you have the possibility of God intervening, as we saw from verse 30. If you have in a local congregation some people who will not evaluate themselves, does God have any other tool? Does God have any other resource in that local congregation to maybe help people out so that they don't end up under God's judgment? Yeah. And hopefully the elders are doing their jobs. You know, elders cannot see into the minds of people, but the behavior of people is something that can be noticed, and sometimes that can be just like you see with a young person, they're indicators that there is a problem, there's something that needs to be addressed, and hopefully elders will help people make the needed corrections, and then those people avoid the judgment of God. God will chasten people. You see that from the first part of verse 32 in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Some people don't believe that. A lot of people, they think about God as being a loving God, and if you are a loving God, you would never discipline anybody. That same thinking sometimes applies to parents. If I love my child, I would never spank my child. I would never say a word which would seem to be harsh. I would never raise my voice to the child. I would never do anything that hurts the feelings of my child. But we know that that's wrong, because love does at times cause people to take corrective action. I mean, wasn't it this loving God that wiped people out with the flood? It was. Did God not love the world? He did, but sometimes you have to say, this is a problem, it has to be addressed, and how it's going to be addressed is not going to be a pleasant experience. Verses 31 and 32 offer a very stern warning to people who are not willing to engage in self-examination and self-judgment. You have to be willing to do that. And in some ways, we do that. People will, judge their hair. They will judge their clothing. They will judge their looks, all kinds of things. But when it comes to their spiritual life, they pay very little attention. Anything that you want to talk about before we pick up with the word chastening? We've also got the word chastened in verse 32. That was often used to describe chastening of a child. You see that in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 7. Here it means the developing and refining of the mind and the will. Another source defined the word chastened in this way: chastened by the infliction of evils and calamities. If you back up to verse 30, again, depending on how you understand that text, is that literal or is that not literal? What could those calamities be in verse 30? He says, many of you are weak and sick, and you're ill. You're also dead. Now, spiritually, possibly. Is that also possibly physical, literal? Yes, and again, I kind of lean towards that explanation, but as I said, I cannot conclusively prove that. Here's an interesting thing. When God says, I might chasten you, I'd like to know the tense of that, wouldn't you? Would that tense be God says, I'm going to chasten you just one time and that's it?
No.
Or do you think that that chastening is ongoing?
No.
Ongoing. If you continue to refuse to evaluate your Christian life, God says, as long as you are repeating that error, God says, I may continue to do what?
Correct you.
Yeah. That's not, I mean, it's like going after a fly. If I were a fly and somebody swatted at me one time, I don't think I'd find that to be a very pleasant experience. But what happens is somebody, I'm the fly, is going after me, and I mean, it's just swat, 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 swat. That's kind of terrifying. And God says, I have the ability to keep up the chastening process. It is not necessarily one and done, and that is somewhat frightening. Let's also, as we go back in verse 30, we talked about this in our last class. Dolores, would you read that again?
Verse 30?
Yep.
Well, this is amplified.
Okay.
That careless and unworthy participation is the reason why many among you are weak and sick, and a number sleep in death.
All right. We talked about before as far as those three words: weak, sick, asleep, or dead. What's that sound like?
Repression.
Yes. Or we might use the word escalation. If you take that and you tie that in with what we have here in verse 32 as far as the chastening, could God's chastening increase or escalate? Law enforcement works that way, doesn't it? Police stop you. First time, we'll give you what?
Warning.
We'll give you a warning. Or maybe there's a little slap on the wrist. We're going to fine you $25. But you do something often enough, and what happens? They will continue to do things that they're authorized to do, and eventually what might occur? You end up?
License.
No driver's license. You end up in jail. You end up in possibly prison. So there is a definite escalation when it comes to law enforcement, and we see the same thing in the spiritual realm. A lot of times as we look at the unsaved, they may have the idea that to allow a person to be afflicted to a point where death may occur, 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 30, that is not a very nice thing to do, but that's not God's view. Do you remember in Mark chapter 8 and verse 37, Jesus asked this question, what shall a man give in exchange for his soul or life, his eternal spirit? And what's the answer to that question? Is there anything worth that? Is there anything? Is the whole world worth our eternal spirit? No. If that's true, then, and the Hebrew writer talks about this when he refers to chastening, he says it's grievous, it's not pleasant, but as you look at it in the grand scheme of things, is it a pretty good deal? You're going to suffer now because what's going to happen in eternity? Hopefully. You're going to experience the chastisement. You're going to look at the circumstances and think, what do I need to do? I need to correct my life, right? I need to get back to that self-examination. If a person does that, then in the end, has God truly blessed them? Or has God really been unjust and unkind to them? He has blessed them. It's like somebody who keeps a person out of prison. They may not like the chastisement. They didn't like the conversation with the police. They didn't like the tickets. They didn't like the 6 months in jail. All those things were not fun. But if that caused them to avoid those long-term and permanent consequences, then in the end it was worth it. Jesus made the same point in Matthew 5 and verse 29 when he talked about the right eye causing people to stumble. He said, pluck it out, cast it from you, for it is better for one of your members to perish rather than what? Your whole body to spend eternity where? In hell. So it's kind of the same point that we see here. One source says there is sure condemnation, therefore, for the world, since it is without chastisement. All right, anything that you might add or ask before we look at the end of verse 32?
How do you think God corrects us now?
Absolutely.
I mean, how? Do you think it's all physical, or do you think it's obstacles in our way, or I'm curious, how does he really correct us right now?
Okay, let's take your question and break it down just a little bit, and then we'll see if we can explore some answers. Great question. When you say, is it physical, and then you add in the other part that you did as far as put objects in our way, how are you defining physical? I think I know, but I want to make sure I understand that first. Okay, weakness and sickness. Let's look at it from the devil's perspective first. Do you think that the devil can discourage us? How do you think the devil can discourage us? Or try to interfere with a Christian life? Let's just make it a little more general.
Temptations in our way.
Okay. So, if the devil has the ability to put some blocks out there for us, think about football as far as an imagery, would we then be inclined to, as we look at God, think that he can unblock some things?
Yeah.
Yes. All right, what else might the devil do?
Discourage you.
All right. Allow people to work on our lives. Maybe they're Christians, maybe they're non-Christians, maybe they're family members who are not necessarily interested in religion, but he can use people. Could God do the same? He could. When you think, for example, about Matthew chapter 13, Jesus, when he gave the parable of the tares, he's talking about the kingdom of God that would definitely seem to go past the miraculous era in the first century, and he uses the illustration that tares were sown among the wheat. Now, how exactly does that occur? I don't know. But in my mind, we're dealing once again with God's providence, that he can create circumstances. If you're looking for some specific examples, we talk sometimes about a person who's avoided an auto accident. And someone says, God was merciful to me. Now, was there some angel that came down and, you know, did this or that with traffic? Well, that's not really what we're expecting, but the timing there. If God has the ability to time things in such a way where we can avoid the wreck, does it not make sense then to conclude that he also has the ability to time things in such a way where we could have the wreck?
The scary thing about that is it makes it feel like God can just let the devil have his way with me. And I mean, I realize that's possible,
yeah,
if you're not faithful and all like that, but it's just a scary thought to think about the way God could correct me.
Yeah. Well, remember, let's go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 5 for just a second. This does kind of relate. First Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 5. Paul says, now here's the guy who was living with his father's wife. He says, deliver this person unto Satan for the destruction of the flesh. But then he says this at the end of verse 5. Why? That the spirit may be saved. So, as you look at that passage, it seems to me that there may be some times where God's protection is maybe not completely withdrawn because he doesn't want people to be destroyed. We know that from the end of verse 5. But God says that there may be some pressure that needs to be exerted. We have seen that sometimes with people who become involved with alcohol. Alcoholics.
That's a reminder.
Yes. Alcoholics Reminder has sometimes dealt with people, often dealt with people. I think it's even fair to say that unless that person hits rock bottom, they will never change. They need to be exposed to the hard realities of life. You have Paul making that statement about some others, you know, as far as delivering people to Satan, letting them go back into the world. I don't know that we can say that God always uses this method or that method, but he has a lot of different tools at his disposal. It could be just providence as far as I could help here, but I'm choosing not to. Or there may be some times where we think about 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13, where Paul said, there's no temptation taken you, but such as man can bear, but God's able to deliver you. So he has the power, but he says you need some corrective activity. So I'm not going to use my power, at least on this occasion. We do that in life a lot of times. To
learning the hard way.
Yes, that really is. It's kind of the school of hard knocks, that if you want to go down this road, we will let you because there's some things that you need to learn. Anybody else? Let's go back and see where we are. Let's go back to the end of verse 32. There you have some conclusive proof that Christians can not only be chastened. What's Paul say at the end of verse 32? Read it again. But when we're judged, we're chastened to the Lord, that or for we may not be what? We may be condemned with the world. Is it possible for a Christian to be condemned with the world? It is. If you are someone who is condemned with the world, that's another way of saying what? And ultimately, your eternal destination is going to be, it's going to be hell. Now, that's what nobody wants, and that's what God is trying to get people, especially his people, to avoid. Correction is never fun. Oftentimes, it's never easy. Sometimes it hurts. There may be some lasting consequences. But once again, if you look at it from the eternal perspective, it is truly a blessing from God when you look at it from the eternal. I don't think there's anybody who's in heaven who decided to go down a wrong road and will look back at that and say, oh, you know, God, I'm so upset that you did that. It would be, I'm thankful. Now, let's make this point as well, because it was great what Dolores brought up, but I don't want to leave something hanging. Do you think somebody might, if they're, you know, really trying to live a good Christian life, and you know, they're headed to work tomorrow and their tire goes flat, or they get into a fender bender, do you think it's possible for somebody to look at that and think, oh boy, must have done something wrong. God got me. He's up there behind the, or I got pulled over by the policeman. Do you think that's what Paul's saying here, or do you think that's an accurate assessment of God? What have we repeatedly seen in 1 Corinthians chapter 11? Well, let's go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 5, since we read that just a minute ago. What's this guy doing in 1 Corinthians chapter 5? Did he just go over and visit some women that he shouldn't have seen? It wasn't that he just went over and knocked on her door and said hi. Wasn't even that he flirted with her. What's he doing? It's like he's moved in with her. He's living with her. I mean, this is blatant. This is obvious. This is something that is ongoing activity. He's been given a long time to clean it up, so to speak. Many opportunities for self-reflection. And this person has not been willing to do that. This person has dug in his heels and says, I am not going to do this. All right, if you're going to do that, if you're going to go to the mat and you're going to fight for this, then God says what? If you're going to take off the boxing, if you're going to put on the boxing gloves, then what's going to happen with me? I'll step into the ring with you, and I'll go toe-to-toe with you. And that's what Paul is saying in 1 Corinthians chapter 5. What do we have in 1 Corinthians chapter 11? Was it the Corinthians were coming together, you know, maybe every Sunday, but once every 10 years they were having a problem? What have we seen as far as the tense in this chapter? It is always ongoing. It is repetitious activity. It is abuse after abuse after abuse after abuse. And once again, God says, if you want to go down that road, if you want to continually jab me in the eye, so to speak, God says, I'll eventually do what? I'm going to come after you. And again, 1 Corinthians chapter 11, that's going to be a graduation. It's not that God's going to necessarily pull out the biggest stick he has initially, but little by little, you're going to be able to see that he's going to do some things that are probably going to be pretty unpleasant. That is an important lesson for us to communicate to people, especially to people who are younger Christians. Sometimes people get the idea, this all-powerful God, he can do some awfully serious things to me that I wouldn't like, and that's true, but he doesn't want to do that. He doesn't do that for, you know, how do we want to describe it? You know, regular sins, I guess, for the people who are trying to live in the right kind of way. God is not the policeman God. He's not hiding behind the stop sign looking for some reason to whack us. But he is full of grace. He's full of mercy. But if we want to go down the road that the Corinthians went down, then we have a very serious, then we have a very strong warning. One other quick point here, and then we'll stop once again. We've talked about this several times over the years, but if it's possible to be condemned by the world, 1 Corinthians 11, verse 32, does that mean a Christian can lose his or her salvation? Yes. You can spend eternity in hell even though you were a Christian. And it's sad that people will sometimes take that course, but God will do his best to get people back on the right track. Anything that you want to discuss? Okay, let's go down and see what else we have. God can and he does judge, present tense, again, first part of verse 32, and that word is the same word that we've got being used back in verse 31. Sometimes Christians, as we said, will not do that, but God will help us in that way because he is a loving God. You can kind of summarize things before we get down to 33 and 34 with three main points. Number one, you as a Christian should judge yourself. Plain and simple. Number two, if Christians don't do that, God can and will judge and discipline his people so that they are motivated to return to him. Good cross-reference there would be Hebrews chapter 12, verses 6 through 9. And then one day, if you go through that process, you're not willing to self-regulate, so to speak, you're not willing to judge yourself, and God does end up giving you some motivational things to help get you back on the right track, he does that so you're not going to be eternally condemned. Final opportunity for questions before we look at 33 and 34. All right, let's read those two verses now. Wherefore, notice a conclusion, or therefore, my brethren, when ye come together to eat, wait for one another. If any man is hungry, let him eat at home, that your coming together may not be unto judgment, and the rest will I set in order whensoever I come. Paul says, when you come together, again, that would seem to be a reference to worship, especially on Sunday. When you come together, I want you to do what? Wait. I mean, that's a pretty simple command, isn't it? Just come together and you wait. And again, he mentions eating as you look at verse 33. Now, in our day and time, and this is really important for us, we've got a clock on the wall. And when it says X hour, we generally say we're going to start our worship period, we're going to start our Bible class period, we're going to reassemble, whatever we're going to do, but we kind of go by clock time. Are there some cultures that are not quite like that? Anybody ever been to an island? Anybody ever visited an island?
Hawaii.
Okay. No, I've never been to Hawaii, so this may or may not be correct. But was there anything that you found about island time that was different than here?
Way different time zones.
No, I was thinking about how people treat time.
I didn't notice.
Okay. So with the military and some other stuff there, I don't know. I mean, they're still part of the state, so to speak. Anybody else? Colombia?
Yes.
If they say we're going to meet at 10 o'clock, when are people usually there?
10:15.
Okay. All right, Colombia gets us a little closer. Yeah. Anybody ever go down to the Caribbean, Trinidad, Jamaica, any place like that? Okay, all right. Now, again, because of if you're in the tourist area, this may not have been such a deal. But did you see anything with time there? Yeah, it's not. I remember, I think this was my first trip to Jamaica. I was, you know, looking at my watch. Okay, you know, it's 6 o'clock. Man, we got to get going. How far is it over there? You know, it's 5:45. It's 5:50. You know, can we get there in 10 minutes? Throw your watch away, Brad. You don't need the watch down here. Well, that was really difficult for me. You know, we got there about 6:15. It's supposed to start at 6 o'clock. We get there at 6:15, and there's nobody there. And we're the setup crew. I'm thinking at 6 o'clock, we should have been here, you know, 5:15, 5:30, something like that. We should have set it up yesterday. Don't worry. It's okay. All right, so, you know, we get some other people coming in about 6:30. And then about 7 o'clock, you know, maybe we've got a third of the people there. I'm thinking, we're an hour behind. Come on, guys. And then by 8 o'clock, you know, we finally got some singing going. And, you know, about 8:30, we finally get revved up. I'm thinking, we would have been home by now. You know, how does this work down here? But if you deal with island people a lot of times, I mean, you say, oh, man, don't worry. All laid back. It's all good. You know, 6 means 8, and I mean, time doesn't really mean anything. So you can have your watch, you can have the clock on the wall, and it's really nothing like that. And I think when you look at Corinth, you kind of have to see time in that same sense. When they were talking about coming together, hey, you know, we're going to meet, you know, let's say that they had a clock on the wall, we're going to meet at 9:30. It probably wasn't quite 9:30 when everybody got there. So if you are in that habit, that's your culture. What does that mean practically when it's time to worship?
Not everybody's going to be there.
Yeah, so you kind of have to have a sense. You know, we're missing 3 over here, and we've got 10 over here that are not here. And, oh, yeah, we've got this middle section. We better wait a little longer. And then you kind of get a pretty good sense after a while. You can kind of look around and see who's here and who's not here. And it's probably time to start. We'll have a few more drift in, and that's fine. But we've kind of got the majority here. It's kind of like on a snow day. You know, we've got people coming in, and it's late, and let's go ahead and get started, and we'll have some others come in. So there was no rush before everybody got there. If you're in that kind of environment where you know that you have to wait for one another, but you've got these people showing up with food, and they're going to gobble it down, isn't that especially egregious? I mean, it would be bad enough to say we're going to start at 10, and people show up at, you know, exactly 10 o'clock and know that some others are going to come later, or you show up at 9:30 and you gobble down the breakfast before everybody gets there. But these people were not really in that kind of culture, and this makes the point really, really shocking. And that's why Paul says, hey, look, you know your culture, you really need to wait for one another. We've called these church potlucks the love fests, and that seems to be a pretty good description for what was taking place. We've also seen earlier in the chapter that there were some poor Christians. They were being excluded from these fellowship meals, and possibly they're also being excluded from the Lord's Supper. Paul does temper the closing remarks. Look at verse 33. He says, wherefore, therefore, my who? My brethren. Do you think based on what these Corinthians were doing, he's just talked about the chastisement. God's probably killed some of you. Now, if you're the preacher writing this letter, what word might you not want to use or be tempted not to use? Would you want to call them brethren? I might be thinking twice about that. I mean, if God has gone through this congregation and sort of cleaned out some of the pews and he's made some people sick, you know, are these people really fellow saints? But that's how Paul looked upon them. He loved them. He wanted the best for them. And he really stayed with them through thick and thin, even though there were some serious problems in the assemblies that had to be corrected. You also, I think, as you look at these two verses, as we get to the end of the chapter, the problems were not related to the place. You will find people, sometimes members of the church, they want to focus on the place. You know, we can't have any kind of food in the building. Well, Paul's not talking about the building. He's talking about the manner, the way in which they acted. That was the issue. So you might have a building that is your church building. You might have a building that's a home. You might be renting a place. The emphasis is on what they were doing when they worshiped, not the location where they worshiped. You have commentators offering different ideas about the eating in verses 33 and 34. There are some people who think that that's a reference to the Lord's Supper. Again, 33 says, wherefore, brethren, when you come together to eat, eat what? Eat the common food, eat the potluck food, eat the love fest, or eat the Lord's Supper, whatever they were doing. And maybe it's a reference to both. He says that you do need to wait. You need to do all things together. It wasn't wrong to bring food for a potluck 2,000 years ago. It's not wrong to bring food for a potluck now. But if you're not willing to do that, if you're not willing to share, if you're going to be unkind to fellow Christians, then you have some serious problems. One of the things that inclines me to think that the Lord's Supper is either not under consideration or it's not the primary point is what you have in verse 34. Take a look again at how the text is read. Let's assume that 33 describes the Lord's Supper. Wherefore, my brethren, when you come together to eat the Lord's Supper, wait for one another. Then 34, if any man is hungry, let him eat where? At home. If 33 refers to the Lord's Supper, and then you remember there are no verse divisions in the original text, then verse 34 would be saying, you eat the Lord's Supper where? You eat the Lord's Supper at home. And that really doesn't make a lot of sense. But if he's talking about a potluck, if he's talking about those love feasts, then that does make sense. Anything you want to contribute, Sean?
Could be, don't come here to eat the Lord's Supper. Go home and eat at home first, then come here and eat the Lord's Supper. If you're really that hungry,
yeah,
eat something at home before you come.
Yeah, that definitely has to be a part of the point, that you have to get this problem under control. There are people sometimes, maybe because of health reasons or whatever, they say, I have to eat right now. Well, okay, we can understand that. That does happen to people. But if that's your issue, settle it, take care of it, fill the stomach, then come to services.
I think both verses I've seen, it does refer to the Lord's Supper, though, in 33. Whether it is or not, like you said, some say yes, some say no.
Yeah, it's a little difficult to fully come down.
It depends on how you read verse 34. It could be either way.
Yes, very good. You're correct. Anybody else? Okay, let's see what else we can pull out of here. If Christians were hungry, this goes back to what Sherman was saying, verse 34, you have two choices. Number one, you can wait for one another. If you feel like you can get things under control, again, examine yourself, then you can come together and you can eat. Everything can be done. Everything is fine. If you can't do that, if you will not do that, then you eat at home. Now, here's an interesting thing that, again, it's probably not new, but when you see eat and drink, those are verbs, and you might pause there and just say, huh, I wonder what the tense is, right? What would you suspect based on all the things that we've seen? Paul says the person who comes to eat and drink, you think that's just a one-time thing, or you think that that would be ongoing activity? Ongoing. So if you read the text in that way, let's take a look at that and see how it looks. If any man is hungry, let him continually eat at home, because he is continually hungry. So that reinforces what we were talking about earlier, that this was not a one-time issue. It's not God is the policeman behind the stop sign, but this is something that was an abuse. It was again and again and again and again. A lot of times people can be pretty forgiving. People can be pretty gracious. But if you have somebody who does something, you know, 1,000 times, you know, after about time 500, what are you thinking? You know, Jesus said, go how many miles? Go the second mile, right? Go twice as far. He didn't say go 2,000. Peter talked about 70 times 7, so there should be a lot of grace when it comes to Christianity, but there does come a point where people have to say this is just too much to endure. God even does that. You might have been able to explain rudeness on an occasion or two, or maybe even 4 or 5 times. Sherman gave us one illustration. Here's a person who says, hey, we know it was potluck day, and, we knew people were going to be hungry, but I want you to know that if you get down there, there is not much food left. Why? Well, we haven't eaten for a couple days, and we were just absolutely famished. Could we understand that?
Yes.
Sure. I mean, okay, I'm probably not going to go home with a full belly, but that's okay. You needed the food, you got the food, and we can get something else. So that's not a problem, and most people, I think, would be okay with that. Or what if somebody said this? Now, remember, they were not set up like we are today with kitchens and stoves and a place to meet like we have, but what if somebody said the food was going to get cold? So we went ahead and ate it. Could you accept that? I'm not getting too many yeses there. So possibly, I mean, you would think, well, you know, cold food can be eaten. Maybe we could have warmed it up some way. So again, that's not necessarily a deal breaker. We're not going to leave the church, but that's probably not the best excuse in the world, okay? What if they had said, well, you know, we waited for a while and you didn't come. So we just started. That's possible. I mean, how long did you wait? You know, 5 minutes? I wish you would have waited a little longer. But, you know, if you wait 30 minutes and nobody shows up, 45 minutes, after a while, we do sort of draw a mental line and say, okay, we don't think that they're coming. No cell phones back in that time, no ability to text, those kinds of things. So, you know, for whatever reason, can't communicate with them, doesn't seem to be here. Maybe let's set a little aside, and that way if somebody does show up, we've got something that we can give them. So there were possible reasons that people could have used. But again, this is something that didn't happen once or twice. This isn't something that happened once in a blue moon. This was every single week. I've said before, these people who came, they had an incredible commitment. If you were treated this badly at a congregation in today's world, most people wouldn't stay. Not in current society. There is no way. People would be out talking about how awful they were treated, how bad this was, how evil these people were, how unthoughtful they were. And, I mean, it would probably make the local newspaper. But this was a habitual problem as far as rudeness. So Paul gives this permanent solution. You wait or you share your food at home. These are the two options for you. You choose one or the other. Another present tense verb is going to be found in the expression coming together. That's in the middle of verses 33 and 34. That verb's going to occur three times in this chapter, aside from what we've got here, verses 17, 18, and 20. And here it tells us that the Corinthians were meeting on a regular basis. We already saw back in verse 17, Paul told the Corinthians there, when you come together, it's not for the better, it is for the worse. Now, when an inspired man tells you that, it's not good. That you went to worship today and God was not pleased. You deserve correction. And as we've seen some from verse 30, some of that correction had already been administered by God. When you look at verse 34, Paul's reference to any man, notice that any man, that would of course include women. He was not just talking about males. Any man being hungry, that could technically apply to anybody given the context, but it looks to me like he's talking about, once again, classes of people. As we said before, it seems to me, when you look at the context, wealthy Christians were coming together, they had potluck food, and they were eating that food before others, that would be the poor, arrived. And then the Corinthians, they somehow tried to justify their actions by saying, well, you know, we were hungry. Well, that can be appropriate, I guess, in some cases. I mean, I think most of us have probably been in a situation where, you know, maybe it was at a meal, and the bowl of whatever mashed potatoes gets passed on to somebody, and they look at it and they say, where did it all go? Well, by the time you passed it to four or five people, I mean, maybe they were hungry for mashed potatoes. I'm sorry, there's not much left. So things like that do happen occasionally, but here it was really, really bad. And there was just no excuse, but that was how the rich were justifying that. So the problem was not eating in the church building. Paul says, wait for one another. Otherwise, you're going to face judgment. The need to wait for one another to function as a unified group of people was really important. So Paul expresses this point for as an order. When he says, wait for one another, we've discussed at different times the fact that sometimes the New Testament describes things as a command, as an order. This is not a suggestion. This is not a good idea. But I am giving you something like a military order. This is a direct command. And that's what Paul told the Corinthians. I am giving you an order. This is not something that you can negotiate. We're not going to talk about this. You must wait for one another if you're going to fulfill the word of God. When you look at that word wait, sometimes it interjects an element of receiving something with anticipation. I don't think, though, that that is the meaning here. What is implied is you wait. For what purpose?
Respecting.
Yes, that's part of it. Anything else? Yes, anything else? If you wait, what's going to happen with that food?
It can be shared.
There's going to be an equal, there's going to be a fair distribution of that food. So those two points plus this third would correct the issue. Okay, the solution to that, if they were not willing to do that, would be you go home and you eat. That is also a command. When Paul says, you go home and you have your food there, once again, it's not a suggestion, it's not a good idea, it's not just some kind of random thought, it is an absolute order. This is what you are required to do, this is what you must do if you are going to avoid that judgment and you are going to please God. The poor must have left worship on a number of occasions and not share in the potluck food and again, possibly the Lord's Supper. Back in verse 21, Paul did make it clear that some went away hungry. Can you imagine? I mean, we have done well, I think really well, over the years with that. We've had a potluck here, and there have been people who maybe had to leave to go care for somebody who was sick, or they themselves were not feeling well. Let's get you some food and send you home with some food. Or let's make sure that you take home some extra food because you've got something going on at home. But to send somebody away hungry, when you had the resources to feed them, that is beyond thoughtless. And that is certainly completely unlike the mind and the spirit of Christ. The other practical lesson, we've already kind of touched on this. Sometimes Christians get upset because one thing happens. And they may remember that one thing for the next 50 years. Well, you know, so-and-so did this to me. Okay, you know. You were offended, you were wounded one time or even 10 times. Is that really a reason to leave the Lord and his people? There's some people who believe that. But imagine being at the Corinthian church. If you were poor, do you feel like, or do you think that you probably already kind of stand out? I mean, if you've got wealthy people and you're poor, you already kind of feel like there's some class division there. But when you know, because this has happened so many times, that you are going to come away hungry from that assembly because the poor people have outfoxed you, how would you feel Sunday after Sunday? I think it will be tough for some people to go back through those doors every Sunday. I think it will be tough to greet people after a service was over and say, "Brother so-and-so, I love you. You ate my food. You left me hungry. My stomach's going to be growling on the way home, but I sure love you a lot." Be kind of tough.
Can a lot of it, too, be, it could be distance. You know, they didn't get in a car and come.
Yes.
They had to either walk or ride a donkey or
oh, yeah.
Whatever. Some of them would have had farther to come than some of the rich people. Maybe.
Yeah. I'm warm. I'm full. I'm fed. I've got my nice carriage or whatever they had to get home. And there's the poor guy. His stomach's growling, and he's got to walk 5 miles or 10 miles to get back home. So it was just unconscionable what these people were doing. And to read through this and say, well, you know, it's eating food in the church building, that misses it about as much as you can miss it. Anybody else? Okay, got a couple minutes left. Let's see if there's anything that I want to get to you. A lot more. Paul closes the chapter by promising to correct the other problems when he comes in person. That's the end of verse 34. When you look at that word translated set in order, it comes from a single term that's found a few other times, and it means to put in order. We don't know what all the issues were, but Paul says, hey, when I show up, things are going to get fixed. If you can't correct the problems yourself, if you're not willing to submit to God's discipline, it's kind of like earlier he told the Corinthians, would you like me to show up with a rod of correction? Or do you want me to show up in a spirit of gentleness? You decide, and your actions are going to determine the way I act.